Blog Talk Radio.
Dallas, Texas, on Sunday, December the 16th, day number 351 of 2012. We're 9 days away from Christmas, 15 days left for year 2012, so the time is flying by, and flying by quite quickly. Merry Christmas to everybody tonight as we speak to you from Dallas, Texas. We'll be talking tonight, as we do on Sunday nights, with Bill Katz of Urgent Agenda. We got a lot to get into with Bill, the terrible tragedy in Connecticut, and some of the political ramifications of that tragedy. Though before I begin, though, I want to thank the management of Blog Talk Radio for featuring our program tonight. If you're listening to us for the first time, well, this is one of our better shows on Sunday nights with Bill Katz of Urgent Agenda. We look at the week in review, we look at what happened and what is going to happen next. I've got to say one thing, and this has been such a horrible week, I think you would agree. The events in Connecticut were just absolutely horrifying. And this afternoon, the Dallas Cowboys gave the fans of Dallas at least an opportunity to get over all of this with a fantastic victory over the Steelers. Or at least for a few hours this afternoon, we could get away from all the problems in the world and cheer the Cowboys. So thank you, Cowboys, for giving us a great game this afternoon. We're going to take a break. We're going to hear from our sponsor, and we'll be right back.
Sending the right message in multiple languages is easy with Avalon Professional Translation Services. Avalon provides document and web translation in 62 languages. In addition, access to 140 languages is just a phone call away any day of the year. Events, even court depositions, no problem for Avalon. Call 972-404-1213 or go to avalontranslation.com. Avalon Professional Translation Services, global communications made easy.
That's exactly right, and we have a link to the Avalon Professional Translation website on the show information. Just click on that, and it'll take you to my good friend Leonard, and tell Leonard that you want something translated, and they're going to do a great job for you. Just a couple of things before we get to Bill. On this day in history, 1773, the Tea Party. This was the real Tea Party. This is when they actually threw the tea into the Boston Harbor on this day in 1773. 1944, a couple of things actually happening on the same day. Glenn Miller, the great musician of the 1940s, his plane was lost on a day like this in 1944. And the Battle of Bulge, the Battle of the Bulge, the last great battle of World War II in Europe, began on a day like this. Let's say hello to Bill Katz. How are you, Bill?
Just fine this evening, Silvio. How about you?
Absolutely great. Absolutely great. Any thoughts on, do you like Glenn Miller? Because I think his music is great.
Yes, I'm a Glenn Miller nut. As a matter of fact, I'm sitting here, and right to the left of me is a book called Glenn Miller and His Orchestra by George Simon, which is the definitive book on the history of the Glenn Miller Band. I'm a great Glenn Miller fan, and in fact, he used to broadcast from not very far from where I am right now, from the Glen Island Casino in New Rochelle, being one of the neighboring towns to White Plains, which is where we are. And there are actually recordings of those broadcasts that are available on CDs.
Wow. I thought he was absolutely great, and whenever I have a chance to listen to those recordings, they're actually in pretty good shape, those recordings. I mean, some of them are 60 years old, but they're actually, you know, with all the technology, they've been able to clean them up, and they sound great.
Well, there are some in particular that were made at Abbey Hall Studios in England, which is where the Beatles made their recordings, that were made in 1944, just a few weeks before his death, that sound extraordinarily good. They were actually lost for years. They're called the lost recordings. They were discovered when some engineer had a tape recording of them, and they have been reissued and brought up to date. But yes, they sound very, very good. The recordings of the civilian, those were recordings of his military band, which was somewhat different in that it had strings. The civilian band recordings basically were in the 1940-1942 era, and they are somewhat less good in sound, but the performances are great. They played right here in New York at the Pennsylvania Hotel, and of course there was the great song that Glenn Miller made famous, Pennsylvania 6.
Right.
Is it 1,000? I've forgotten the number
now.
Yeah,
right. I know what you mean.
But I have been in that hotel many times. Of course, it isn't the same hotel it was then, but the Café Rouge is where he played in that hotel. Died at the age of 40, as you said. He died in a mysterious plane crash over the English Channel. He had a fear of flying. Took off to go to France set up his operations in France. France having been essentially liberated by this time in 1944, and the plane disappeared. At least that's the official story. The theory, and I think it is the one that holds up more than any other, is that his plane was flying over the English Channel, and a group of RAF bombers was flying over it, returning from a raid on Germany, and had some extra bombs. And one of the rules of war is that you try not to land with bombs on board, because they can, if you have a mishap on landing, they can explode. And they dropped their bombs over the English Channel to drop them into the channel, and one of the bombs hit Glenn Miller's plane, which was flying below.
Mm.
Now, I know that looks like a one in a million chance, but that does seem to be the most logical thing that happened.
Yeah, and in fact, I think it was the History Channel that did, I remember a few years ago, watching a documentary about Glenn Miller, and that was the theory that they were, not the theory, but that was the argument they were making, that it was one of those horrific accidents of war where his plane just happened to be at the wrong place at the wrong time, and all you need is one little bomb to hit it.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the end, because he was flying, from
single engine.
Yeah, that's right. But the plane was a Canadian plane, that Canadian aircraft, and
yes.
The fellow who was one of the fellows who was in the, in at least this is what I saw on TV. One of the guys that was in the planes, looking down, saw this plane, this single engine plane flying.
That's correct.
He recognized immediately that it was a Canadian aircraft.
Yes.
Unfortunately. That's what happened. He got that seems to be the theory. But great, great guy. I grew up listening to his music because my father is still a big fan of Glenn Miller, and I remember many times as a kid he would put that one of his albums on the turntable. I mean, an absolutely great, great performer. Bill, I wanted to begin tonight with this terrible tragedy. I mean, there's no logical explanation for it, what just happened in Connecticut, much closer to you there in New York City. I mean, just an absolutely horrible thing. And then, of course, now you've got the gun control people coming alive, almost as if they're emboldened by a tragedy like this. And I don't see the connection between gun laws and what happened. I mean, to me, Bill, I think this is more of a person who had a mental health problem and just wasn't being supervised. That's where I'm coming from.
That, I think you're absolutely right. Look, we are a country that has a lot of guns. We have tens of millions or even maybe hundreds of millions of guns around. Connecticut has some of the strictest gun laws in the country. In fact, I'm a gun owner, and I did not buy a gun in Connecticut, which is right across, we were about 15 minutes from the Connecticut border, and I remember going to a gun shop a couple of years ago to buy a Ruger. And he couldn't sell it to me because there was a waiting period. There's a waiting period in Connecticut. So I bought the gun in New York. It was just a target rifle. And the laws are very, very strict. No gun law could have stopped this particular tragedy because the guns were bought legally by his mother. They apparently were not properly secured. Or if they were properly secured, he had the key to the safe. And he went out and did what he did. I think you're absolutely right that one aspect of these things that people don't want to deal with is the mental health aspect, and one reason is that it is not politically correct. The politically correct line of the political left in America is that it's the gun lobby, it's the gun owners, it's the crazies. But the fact of the matter is, if you look at case after case like this, you find that these horrible crimes are committed by people with a mental health history. And that mental health history, one, could not be put into the federal database because of politics, because of the politics of mental health, where it's considered a privacy issue, so we don't put it into the federal database, which was the case of the shooter in the Gabriel Giffords tragedy, who had five contacts with the police the year before, but they were considered mental health issues, so it didn't go into the federal database, and he was able to go into a store and buy a gun. And you have... look, I've never been opposed, even though I'm a gun owner, I am not opposed to reasonable methods and effective measures that might reduce the possibility of these things happening. But what I really object to are these gun control nuts who come out of the woodwork, as you say, and exploit the grief of people by making stupid proposals that have no chance of having any effect at all. I'll give you some examples. Immediately out of the woodwork comes... come members of the Senate, some very good members of the Senate, saying we must reinstate the ban on assault rifles. That ban on assault rifles, which expired in 2004, did absolutely no good, and when the ban was dropped in 2004, there was no increase in crimes like this. As a matter of fact, over the years, there's actually been a decrease in this type of horrific a tragedy. So, but they keep on making these proposals knowing they don't do any good, but they make them because they feel it makes them feel good about themselves.
Right.
Another thing.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Bill.
No another. I'm sorry. You saying?
No, I was saying go ahead and finish. I was going to make another point, but go ahead and finish your.
Another thing that you're going to see proposed are these stupid gun-free zones. Every one of these tragedies occurs in a gun-free zone. You would not put a sign on your house saying, doors unlocked, we are not armed. That would be crazy. And
right.
Yet we do it in schools. We do it by declaring it a gun-free zone, which means any attacker knows he can come in and have a free-for-all. That
right.
is just the why do we do it? Well, we do it because it makes people feel good about themselves. We're
right.
the good people. And, yes, there is some logic. I mean, some people will say, well, you know, if you allow guns on these campuses, even legitimate gun owners, and you know, there could be an argument between two people. Yes, that could happen. It's very rare. It could happen. But they make the point that at Virginia Tech, where a tragedy like this occurred a few
right.
years ago, that's a gun-free campus. This guy went from building to building just shooting people.
Right.
And the point was made, and it's always sneered at, if a few people had been armed and trained, we can't guarantee it could have been prevented. And we can't guarantee that they wouldn't have shot innocent people. But at least there was a chance this could have been minimized. And in fact, there have been cases where it has been minimized, where people have run to a car to get a gun. Now, you know, that itself is a sordid situation. We do have so many guns in America, it's probably going to be impossible to control every one of them. So we have to look basically for patchwork solutions. But certainly one of those things that we should be looking at is this nonsense that mental health issues are inherently
right.
private. We have people running around New York City, you read about them all the time, who are mentally ill, who menace other people. We had a case just last week of a person who probably was mentally ill, I can't say for sure, but the description certainly fit that pattern, who pushed a man onto a railroad track and killed him. And yet nothing is done about that because it isn't fashionable. Once again, intellectual fashion plays a part. I would say, by the way, that one of the things we're going to have to look at public institutions in America is the same thing they do in societies where there's a fear of terrorism. And that is the simple placement of security guards who are armed and trained properly. And I suspect that would have a dramatic impact.
I think so, and especially in schools, Bill.
Of course, in schools. We leave. You know, you'll notice I had something on our Angels Corner tonight, which is our subscription service. You'll notice none of these tragedies ever occur in an urban school. Now, the urban areas are the areas where the highest crime rates occur, and yet you don't find these mass killings in schools. Now, I have to believe there is something about the urban environment that makes it impossible for the alleged killer, the anticipated killer, to believe that he can get away with it. You know, the people say they say, well, these people commit suicide. I mean, they commit suicide after they commit the act.
Right.
They don't commit suicide before they commit the act. Then there wouldn't be an act.
Right.
They one of the things needed, and I hope that our subscribers read tonight my 14 points of what is needed to commit a crime like that. One of them is the shooter, the crazy person, needs to know that he's going to survive to commit the act. If he fears that he won't survive to commit the act, he's not going to do it. And yet we invite people in. And that is one of the tragedies. Sometimes you just have to do what the Israelis do, which is to put armed guards at the entrances to public institutions. And people may have to be checked. We may have to have more of that careful society. It's been pointed out that in countries with very high rates of gun ownership, like Israel and Switzerland, there are very low rates of crimes. There are countries that ban guns or have very heavy gun restrictions, like some of the Scandinavian countries, that actually have very high rates of crimes. It's been pointed out that Japan, which does not permit gun ownership, it was part of the post-war reforms. You cannot, except under very, very restrictive circumstances, own a gun in Japan, and it's been pointed out there are some years when there are almost no gun deaths in Japan. That is true. It is also true that Japan has the second highest suicide rate in the world. So these things, you have to look at them carefully and study them. And I think the sad thing is there probably will not be an intelligent discussion. There will be foolish proposals that will have no effect at all.
Right. And I was watching, Bill, you saw George Will, because I thought he made some very excellent points today. On ABC, and it's on. You can watch the video on the internet. But I thought, you know, George Will made some of the same points that you're making right now. And then there was a lady there, a Democrat congresswoman, who was saying, well, you know, these guns. And I just looked at the TV and I said, you guys had majorities in Congress and never did anything about it. You know, the Democrats are great at talking about gun control, but they talk about it in the abstract. They never put a proposal on the table because they know that whenever they put a proposal on the table, they don't have votes within their own party to pass it. But yet they play politics with it. But the other thing, Bill, too, that always bothers me is that we don't look at some of the other root causes of what's happening in our society, what I call the cultural decay. I remember as a, 10 years ago when I had my sons were younger, that sometimes it was absolutely amazing to me to watch some of the videos that they were playing, and I was always more afraid of the videos they would play at other kids' homes when I couldn't see them, you know?
Yeah.
And it was amazing the violence that some of these videos, the violence in the movies,
yeah.
And I'm not saying that that's responsible for everything, but it's got to have an influence. I mean, these kids see this kind of violence on TV. It desensitizes them, Bill, but we never talk about that because, of course, Hollywood is a major donation factor,
sure,
for President Obama and the Democratic Party. And the other thing I want to say, and maybe this is a bit controversial, Bill, but I believe it, when you have a country where you have a million abortions every year,
yes,
where life is inconvenient for certain women at a certain point, that has to desensitize people as well, Bill, because, you know, if life doesn't matter, if life is inconvenient, that all of this, when you add it up, I think it's a much more important factor than the gun laws, Bill.
Well, I think that's probably true. Now, let's talk about the cultural aspects for a second. I oppose very violent movies. I oppose them just on general moral grounds and on artistic grounds. Do they have an effect? I think they may be more an effect than a cause. I think they reflect the desensitization of our society. Do they actually cause crimes? Well, let's put it this way. In 1943... there were 8 million people living in New York City, about the same as today. The population of New York hasn't changed that much. There was war going on all over. There was killing going on all over. We had war movies, thousands of explosions on the earth every day. And in 1943, there were 42 murders in New York City. It was incredibly... Why? Well, I can't tell you why. One reason why may have been that so many young people were off at war and not living in the city. Because if you take a look at the pattern of these crimes, it is almost always young men. They are almost all white. which I think is interesting. There may be a few Asians involved, which is also interesting, which may have to do with the financial ability to buy guns. They tend to occur in certain environments. It's interesting they do not usually occur in large urban environments. They don't usually occur in large minority environments. They generally occur in suburban environments. And I made that point at Urgent Agenda today on our, in our subscriber situation, that that, I think, is something that has to be looked into. The suburban environment is a more vulnerable environment, and it goes back to the lack of protection. As far as other aspects of the society, I agree with you. I think that abortion has desensitized this country. I think on the political left you have a remarkable insensitivity to human life. You find these people who want to deny medical care, for example, to very elderly people, saying it's too expensive. You know, when you start putting a dollar figure on a human life, you're getting into a very, very insensitive area. I agree with you on the abortion thing. I agree with you on the culture. But again, I think that's a very complex issue. I don't necessarily believe that movies cause people to go out and commit crimes, but they are part of the overall desensitization. I remember back in the 1960s, there was a film called Bonnie and Clyde, that you may remember.
Yes, yes.
And
yes,
there was a great uproar about that because it had so much violence. Mm-hmm. But nobody actually noticed an increase in violence after Bonnie and Clyde was made. But it indicated, I think, something else wrong in the society. I think you're right in that the tolerance of these violent movies like Quentin Tarantino, where you see all the bloodshed, indicates something else, an acceptance of it that occurs in society.
And I can tell you, Bill, as the father of three boys, I never had any girls, so I can't speak for what it does to girls, but boys, for some reason, really get turned on by all of that stuff. Because I remember, you know, there's something about boys when they're 14 or 15 where that kind of excessive violence, and I'm not trying to play psychiatrist, but I mean, it just seems like it boys react to it differently than girls. The girls tend to, what can I say, they tend to walk away from it, I guess, or just don't watch it. But for the boys, I think it's a big deal.
Well, it may be. It may be. And yet, it's interesting that, again, I don't know. I'm not defending, by the way, highly violent movies. I write suspense stories. I've written 10 suspense novels. I never have much violence in them, and that's one of the reasons. I don't have four-letter words either, and that's one of the reasons. But I don't know if there's a direct cause and effect, but I do know that there is a culture of violence. There is also a culture of excusing violence, which is on the left. The idea that, you know, we talk, for example, about the terrible crime rates in minority communities, and for 40 years in this country, we tolerated that horrible violence because liberals were telling us, well, this is just a reflection of oppression, and if we take care of the socioeconomic problems, this will go away. Well, Rudy Giuliani came along in New York, and the murder rate in New York has gone down 80% as a result of reforms that he and his police commissioners and his successor, Mike Bloomberg, have put into place. In Chicago, by contrast, the city is a shooting gallery. Now, why is New York not a shooting gallery and Chicago a shooting gallery? Same basic culture, same other things. Well, in one city, effective action was taken. And in another city, effective action was not taken. In New York, one of the things that Giuliani did in his police commissioner, Bill Bratton, was they realized that to take effective action against crime, you have to bypass the local political and ethnic leaders. In Chicago, they don't bypass them, and nothing ever seems to get done. You have to get bypass the social propagandists who tell you, oh, you can't do this. You have to bypass some of the so-called civil liberties people, whose civil liberties interest in civil liberties only seems to extend to civil liberties for criminals. And the result in New York has been dramatic. The greatest beneficiary in New York has been African Americans. The death rate in African Americans has gone down dramatically. And there are things, it's not one thing. It's a series of steps you take. For example, we have had a tremendous decrease in this country in the rate of automobile deaths. Just the rate, not the actual number, because the population has grown. But the rate has gone down dramatically. It's a series of steps which did indeed begin with better safety standards for cars. And there I have to give credit to the federal government. They did a good job in a case where an industry would not do the job.
Right.
But also increased competition in the automobile industry, which allowed us to bring in cars that were better made and better constructed. I think there has been the drunk driving campaigns, I think, have been very effective in many areas. Driver education. It's a series of things that have this impact. And, you know, I'm reminded of a very interesting story about the decline, or rather the increase in the life expectancy rate over the last century. And, you know, we think of it in terms of surgery and, you know, emergency rooms and things like that. And a physician who's a researcher told me that the greatest impact, the greatest cause of the decrease in death rates and increase in life expectancy has been public health, sanitation. That if you clean up the conditions in areas and teach people even to wash their hands. I was at visiting a hospital recently, and a nurse was attending a patient, and she held up her hands beforehand and said to the patient, "I have washed my hands." And they're supposed to say that to assure the patient that they have gone through the ritual. And, you know, simply washing hands, clean water, boiling water, these things have a dramatic impact. Then you add to it antibiotics, you add to it modern medicine and medical research, the boon in prescription drugs. It's many, many things that help to solve these problems.
Right. And I think in the case of these terrible tragedies, you know, there are lots of, I mean, I love to have a serious conversation, and I love to have hearings in Congress and have everything put on the table, but that's never going to happen because, like you say, it's not politically correct to talk about mental health. And, you know, it's not politically correct, for example, we just lost 18 little kids in this terrible incident in Connecticut. We've lost that many people in Chicago, but nobody talks about that killing. I mean,
that's
because
right.
It's all black and black crime, and they don't want to talk about it, and they don't want to deal with the root causes. So I just think that it's a terrible tragedy, and I don't know what else to say other than that, but I just hope that we don't go nuts here with gun control, because as I said many times, it's not the gun, it's the guy who pulls the trigger that I'm worried about. I'm not worried about the guns, I'm worried about the guy who pulls the trigger. But Bill, I thought maybe tonight I wanted to focus on this tragedy in Connecticut because it's foremost in the news, but there's some other things if we could just kind of briefly touch on them. Egypt had an election, and I'm not really clear what happened. Do you understand what happened?
Well, they had this election over this constitution, which was written in 10 minutes, apparently, by a bunch of Islamists.
Yeah.
And the election, it's a two-phased election. Part one was yesterday. Part two is next Saturday. The results of part one, apparently, are the people favoring the constitution won narrowly, but there are now screams of election fraud and ballot box stuffing. The Constitution will probably pass. It's a bad Constitution. It does not provide the things a modern Constitution should provide for. But Morsi, who's the president of Egypt, is Obama's new best friend. You know,
and
that'll last for 20 minutes. And then he'll have another new best friend, probably Chuck Hagel. You know, Egypt will go downhill. I mean, a constitution like that, which does not guarantee rights for women, which does not guarantee rights for minority religions, is no constitution at all. And the Arab Spring is now failing. Now, what can be done about it? I don't know. I mean, there is a tremendous opposition in Egypt, and more power to them. But, you know, we didn't give the true Democrats, with the small d, any help in Egypt at all. I mean, this administration is just, they really are the pits in terms of commitment to democracy. One can say, well, George Bush, you know, talked a lot and didn't do very much, and I think that's probably true. At least he talked the talk. I mean, at least he talked about democratic reforms. This administration is run by a man who took 4 days to come to a microphone during the Iran Revolution of 2009 to say, oh, yeah, I'm for democracy also, and did absolutely nothing to help the opposition. I think he has a certain sympathy for these some of these kind of quasi-totalitarian Muslim regimes, because I think he has a certain sympathy for Islam. And I think Egypt, it doesn't seem to be any better than it was. I mean, so they had an election. So they went to the polls and elected a bunch of crazies, you know? I mean, the point has been made that Adolf Hitler was elected also in an election. And we are also looking at this horrible situation in Syria where more than 30,000 human beings have been murdered. Nothing much is being done. One of the deputy ministers in Syria today, I think it was the deputy prime minister, said, neither side can win. I'm not so sure that's true, but neither side can win. And some kind of a truce has to be arranged. But here the president is really stuck in a bad situation because the Assad regime is very bad, but some of the opposition groups are linked to Al-Qaeda.
Yeah.
But we have this very, very serious problem of these weapons of mass destruction that are in Syria. They're something of a mystery. How did he get so many chemical weapons? Nobody wants to talk about the 900-pound gorilla in the room and the possibility that a lot of these were supplied by Iraq before the Iraq war and were sent from Iraq and hidden in Syria, which would have made, then what he wants to talk about it, because that would have made George Bush right on the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. So you're not going to hear too much about that. But
no.
He has them. We have sent missile defense batteries to Turkey to defend Turkey against a fellow Islamist regime. We have a very bad situation. The whole Middle East is in very bad shape.
Right.
And I point out that part of the story, and it's a very important part of the story, are the following things. Tomorrow, a report is being delivered to the State Department about the Benghazi raid. We don't know what's in the report yet, but it's interesting that Hillary Clinton just suddenly had a very convenient concussion. and well, not, boy, did she fall at the right time.
Right.
And will not be testifying before Congress on the Benghazi situation. Look, I will take her word for it that she had a concussion. But, you know, concussions don't last forever, and she could testify. I just think that there is a mess here so big that she just doesn't want to testify. I also think that, you know, I'm speaking theoretically now. I have no proof. But I just feel in my gut that President Obama wants to end her political career. He doesn't want to be succeeded by Hillary Clinton because he knows she will outshine him. And I think that he is going to throw her under the bus. He already has to a certain degree, and that she will leave office with a shadow over her. And I believe that he's going to appoint John Kerry as Secretary of State, leaving a Senate seat open, and he will want that seat to be filled by Deval Patrick, the African-American governor of Massachusetts, which will make Deval Patrick a contender for national office in coming years. And I believe that despite the fact that Bill Clinton did yeoman service to Barack Obama, Barack Obama is not a man who knows how to say thank you. And I believe that Hillary is going to come out of this very badly.
Yeah. Bill, another thing about the Middle East, too, a story that I saw, I sent you article about this, and again, it was just one story. I have not seen a lot about this, but that we're secretly putting troops back in Iraq. About 3,000 troops, I guess, are going back into Iraq. You know, I don't know. I mean, it makes sense. I'm sorry we took them out in the first place, but it makes sense because now even the possibility of Al Qaeda in Iraq and Iran, you know, that's another problem that may happen in 2013, but you mentioned John Kerry, Bill, and Hillary Clinton, and as we look ahead to next week, now next week is not going to be a very busy week because of Christmas and the holidays and all of that, but it's very likely that, as you indicated, that President Kennedy will nominate John Kerry.
President Obama. President
Obama, forgive me, will nominate Senator Kerry for state, former Senator Hagel, is it? Yeah, Hagel for defense.
Oh, what a choice.
Yeah, what a choice. And I mean, these two people, very likely, they'll probably get confirmed, I think, both of them. But that's going to be apparently the team that we'll be dealing with next year. That and all the implementation problems for Obamacare, Bill, that's another huge problem. 25 states are not participating. Now you've got more and more taxes. You have 18 Senate Democrats who wrote a letter saying they don't like the medical device tax. Where were these people when they were voting for this bill?
Yeah, isn't that funny? Isn't that, and led by Al Franken,
right,
the comedian from Minnesota, who
right.
suddenly has discovered that there are medical research and medical device companies in his state. I'm glad he noticed. And these people are going to face severe taxation as a result of Obamacare. And it's going to pass on the costs to patients and to hospitals, which may not be able to pay them. I noticed even a story that it's going to affect veterinary care because some of these companies make devices for veterinarians. So they're suddenly up in arms and they want an exemption from Obamacare. You're right about Kerry. Look, I'm no John Kerry fan. I mean, certainly not. But apparently he's very well liked in the Senate and that there'll be no difficulty confirming him. The Hagel nomination is the one that really gets me. If this man is nominated to be Secretary of Defense, he has opposed the very essence of American defense policy. They call him a Republican. Calling him a Republican is like calling Benedict Arnold a loyal American. I mean, this man has betrayed
right.
his party. He couldn't even get his party's renomination to the Senate, which is why he had to leave the Senate. He turned against his party. He turned against President Bush. He would refuse to endorse John McCain for president in 2008. But people say, but he's a former member of the Senate, and they like him personally. Well, for goodness sake, what does the Republican Party stand for? If they vote to confirm this man, because he used to be a Republican senator,
right.
I say it stands for nothing. He's
right.
very anti-Israel, opposed to our relationship at a very delicate time in Middle Eastern history. He's kind of one of these goofballs who kind of takes a very left-wing position on foreign policy. Kerry probably is more sophisticated in a strange way than Hagel is, but I don't think it's a team that is going to be very, very effective. I think we're in for a lot of trouble in 2013, a lot of economic
right.
trouble and a lot of foreign policy trouble, and this country is losing its impact and it's losing its strength, and I think we are going to pay, and our children are going to pay a horrible price down the line.
I think you're right, Bill. And the other thing that, and we mentioned this a little bit last week, but the other thing that surprises me, here we are December 16th, with basically the next 2 weeks being holiday weeks where not much is going to get done. I don't think they'll have hearings in the next couple of weeks. The new Congress takes over on the 4th of January. President Obama will be re-inaugurated on the 20th, and we don't have a team yet in place. I mean, it's going to take at least a couple of weeks to get these people through the Senate. I mean, we may be looking at, more and more delays in getting his team ready for the second term. I don't know. I don't think that's a good idea, Bill.
It's not a good idea because he's not a very good president. I mean,
right.
this is a man who knows how to run for office, but he doesn't know how to conduct the office. He's been in office for 4 years. I can't think of any real success he's had. He passed Obamacare, he calls that a success. But, some people say he's been very successful in terms of his objective, which was to take the United States largely out of international affairs, or at least weaken it in international affairs, and become just another country. There he succeeded. We had this North Korean missile test, which is
right.
frightening, and which can change the politics of East Asia, which is critical to the politics of the United States. We have Iran proceeding toward an atomic bomb and not being stopped, and we have an incoming Secretary of Defense, if in fact Hagel is nominated, it's not a done deal, who has been very soft on Iran and actually an appeaser of Iran. Where is the good news here for the end of the year? There really isn't any.
No, there really isn't any good news at all. And then, as you indicated, this Libya Benghazi investigation, I think there's something very ugly that they don't want to come out. Now, I've heard all kinds of theories, Bill. I've heard that we were doing gun-running operations. I mean, I don't know. But I've heard all kinds of rumors. But there's four people dead, Bill, and I think we owe it to their families to at least explain what happened.
I think we do. Now, the commission that is making its report tomorrow is headed by Thomas Pickering, a man I don't particularly care for. He's a former U.S. ambassador who is kind of a go-along State Department old hand type, who I think is kind of, a little bit of a what I call the goofball crowd. But the deputy or the co-chairman of that commission is Mike Mullen, who is the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who I think is somewhat better. Let's see if they come out with an honest report or with a cover-up. We don't know yet. But I happen to agree with you. I think there was speculation in the press last week that something very big is going to come out about Benghazi, and it's going to be very ugly.
Right.
What that is, I don't know. There was a report that our forces were told to stand down during the attack and not to shoot back. That may be true. I don't know. But
yeah.
I think the fact that a report is coming out that Hillary Clinton will not testify, even though she's the Secretary of State, and also something that we kind of have forgotten. There's been one person who's been sacrificed during this whole Benghazi thing, and it was David Petraeus. And
right.
David Petraeus was sacrificed over an affair? Come on.
Yes.
I mean, really, all David Petraeus had to do was to go out and say, I didn't have an affair with this woman. She was, I mentored her. She was a fellow West Point graduate. It would have all been over. He was forced to walk the plank. They had emails, which apparently are embarrassing, and he was forced out, and there was a reason why he was forced out. Obama didn't want him to remain. Why didn't he want him to remain? My theory, and it's only, again, I always stress when I don't have absolute information,
right.
But my guess is that he would not go along with the cover-up and was therefore forced out. They probably, they could tell him, look, well, we released the telegrams. We'll find a way to release them. Well, not the telegrams, but rather the emails.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, the idea that David Petraeus resigned over an affair, everybody has affairs in Washington. I mean, this is not the first one, apparently, for him. And they had to know that over the years. That just did not pass the smell test.
Right.
He was forced out for a reason.
Right. And, Bill, if you remember, and I remember reading a lot about Watergate, happened in June of 72, but really didn't explode until the spring of the following year when, the hearings took place and the information
yes.
started to come out. So even though at this point, we're not talking about Benghazi, I mean, this thing could be really, really ugly in a couple of months. So, I mean,
yes.
it may actually be a very difficult thing for President Obama. I mean, I'm looking at it from the standpoint of the families of these four people who were killed, three Navy SEALs. Those are the most heroic of men, some of the most brave men that we have in our country. And the idea that, they were just basically left there to die is something that really bugs me. But, Bill, we're going to have to wrap it up for tonight. But next week, Bill, when we talk, I'm going to ask you if you will share with us your letter to Santa Claus.
Yes.
I'm anxious to know what you're asking for.
These days we'll probably have to write an email.
Right. Well, that's true.
Right.
An email or a text message to Santa.
Text message, right.
But I'm anxious to know what you're asking for.
I will reveal my wishes.
Yes, because I may do the same thing. We can both share our dear Santa letters. I mean, I don't write very long letters anymore to Santa Claus. But I usually like to get at least one or two wishes, and we'll share that next week because that'll be our last show right before the Christmas holiday. How New York City is beautiful at this time of the year, isn't it?
It is
with all the decorations.
It is. It is very beautiful, but equally expensive.
That's right. That hasn't changed. But the elegance of New York when you watch some of these. I was watching the other day the movie. The one about the Santa Claus, the Miracle on 34th Street.
On 34th Street.
Yeah,
with Natalie Wood.
That's right. The old one, the black and white.
Yes.
I guess they've restored into color. And the elegance of New York City. Some of the beautiful.
Yes.
I mean, it's just absolutely incredible how elegant the city used to be.
Well, yes, and it's still quite beautiful at Christmas time, but it's the city has. I think it's changed, and I think it has lost some of that old elegance, the old kind of European elegance that it used to have. And I think also it has priced itself out of the market of so many people that it isn't really, quote, our New York anymore, I mean, I grew up at a time in New York when somebody who, who worked at a reasonably good day job could afford to live in Manhattan and to have a family in New York. And now it's especially Manhattan has become basically a place for it's Wall Street and, you know, European millionaires. And I think it's changed the tone of the city.
Right. And the interesting thing about it is that probably a lot of the people who were living in that Connecticut town where this tragedy happened, I bet a lot of those were men who commute back and forth to work every day.
Yeah, it's a little outside the commuting zone. It's about 80 miles from New York. So it's that would be a very long commute, but they certainly are within the New York City orbit.
That's right. That's exactly right. Well, Bill, have a wonderful week. We look forward to checking Urgent Agenda and get that Dear Santa letter ready. I'm anxious to know what you're asking for.
Right. Okay. Well, I'll make up my list this week.
All right. You do that, Bill. Have a great week.
Same to you, Sylvia.
All right. We're going to take a little break. We'll hear from our sponsor, and we'll be right back.
Canto Group is a recruiting firm located in Dallas, Texas that specializes in the placement of executives and engineering professionals with companies throughout Texas. If your company is seeking quality candidates in the fields of general managers, plant managers, sales, CFOs or controllers with a manufacturing background, production manager supervisors, engineering specializing in mechanical, manufacturing, industrial, electrical, safety, or quality engineers or designer drafters, feel free to contact our team regarding your company's future or current openings. Contact Silvio Canto Jr., email thecantogroup@aol.com, or visit our website, thecantogroup.com.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, and as we do on Sunday nights, we just had a great chat with Bill Katz of Urgent Agenda. We have a link to Urgent Agenda on the show information. We certainly appreciate if you sign up for that or bookmark it, because as you could tell, Bill is very knowledgeable. He writes a great deal about foreign policy, which is one of the reasons that I like to check his Urgent Agenda every day. He's got a lot of coverage in what's happening in Egypt, what's happening in Syria, and this is something that we sometimes don't get a lot of this on the news media, at least not the kind of focus that Bill puts on it. So Urgent Agenda, we certainly recommend that you bookmark it and check it every day. I think you'll find Bill Katz to be an extremely informative and interesting person. We spoke a little bit at the beginning of the show tonight. I wanted to spend a little bit of time talking about this terrible tragedy in Connecticut. Look, it breaks my heart. I mean, the idea that, you know, what, 18, 16, 20 little kids were gunned down like this, it's almost so, it hurts to talk about it so much because, you know, as the father of three sons, I remember when my sons used to go to, you know, elementary school, and I remember all these little kids coming out of class, and some afternoons when I would go by and pick up our sons, it was a real treat for me whenever I had a chance to do that, by the way, because there was so much energy and so much enthusiasm. When you went to an elementary school, it was like, you know, if you were having a bad day or something, or a rough day at the office, and you went over there, and all of a sudden, you saw all these little kids with their smiles and their innocence, and they would just, they put you in the right frame of mind just to be with them. So the idea that kids of that age would be gunned down like this by this wacko is something that just, it just breaks your heart. I mean, you just, I just had to shut off the news. To be honest with you, I mean, I just couldn't watch it anymore because it just hurts so much to watch this thing and to know how much suffering. I couldn't imagine. It is beyond my comprehension the suffering that some of those parents are having. There's a lady that was a friend in Facebook, and she put something on Facebook the other day that almost made me cry. She said, think of all the Christmas trees in this town, all those little gifts, all those things hanging from the fireplace. Think of all of those, you know, that all of a sudden those kids are not around. Think of the parents and how terrible it must be for them. So I that's what I mentioned at the top of the show, that I was so excited this afternoon because the Cowboys gave us one of the best games of the year, if not the best to watch, and it was so much fun to sit there and just watch the game for like 3.5 hours to get totally detached from all these problems and just have a game and have a great time, talk about something fun. So I thank the Cowboys, as I said at the top of the show, for giving us the greatest game of the year, the best game of the year today, a game that was a lot of fun to watch, and it turned out good for the Cowboys because now they're 8-6 and they're tied for first place. I mean, they got a couple of games they got to win, though. It's not a done deal, but at least as of tonight, they're tied with Washington and with the New York Giants. And it was just a distraction from all these terrible problems. But as Bill and I were talking, every time you have one of these terrible crises, immediately the gun control people come out and they say, we got to legislate guns or we got to control guns. But they already have gun laws in Connecticut. These are gun-free zones. So he wasn't supposed to be there. And I think it simply makes the point that these criminals, these sick people, are always going to get their guns. And as Bill and I were talking, and I would definitely recommend that everybody reads that book by Clayton Kramer, my brother Ron, because this is what he goes into. His brother had all kinds of mental health problems, and his brother should have been supervised more. And, in fact, the family was concerned that the brother would do some harm to other people. But, you know, now we have all kinds of privacy rules and all kinds of politically correct thing, and we can't control or supervise a lot of these people. But this young man who committed this act in Connecticut, just like the one in Oregon, just like the ones, you know, in the past, in every one of these cases, when it happens and then we begin to learn more and more about the individual, what we learn more and more is that these people have problems, that they're almost like screaming at us, you know, please, I have problems, do something about it. But we don't. We don't do something about it because there's a lot of concern about political correctness. There's a lot of concern about privacy and rights and all this kind of stuff. And we got to get over that. We got to start dealing with the reality that some of these people are a threat to society, and society has every right to protect citizens like those little children from people like this. Now, am I totally against gun control? No, I mean, there are some reasonable things you can do. I mean, we can certainly tighten up a few things, and that's fine. I'm willing to sit down and have a rational discussion with somebody about that. But that's not, you know, to sit there, some of these people immediately start coming out saying, well, we got to, you know, legislate guns. We got to do away with the assault weapon. As Bill was indicating, when we ended the assault weapon ban, there was no increase in violence. And, I mean, the whole point is that these things are not related to the gun. As I mentioned with Bill, I'm not worried about the gun. I'm worried about the person who's pulling the trigger and what is going on in this person's mind to pull the trigger and commit acts of this fashion. Again, my heart is broken. I mean, it's really broken about this terrible thing in Connecticut, and my sympathies to the families of those young people, not just the young people. There's some very young teachers, too, who were killed, and apparently there was a very heroic principal, too, that we should remember. All of them, 26, I think, altogether, they're people who should have never been exposed to this kind of violence, and my heart goes out to all of their families, and we certainly remember them. And what a terrible time, with Christmas just around the corner, what a terrible time for this to happen. But it's not a gun control problem. Believe me, it's not a gun control problem. I think it's a people problem. And we got to get over political correctness in this country and start dealing with the people. The people are the ones, the people who are pulling the trigger. That's what we need to worry about. We need to worry about the kinds of people that commit these acts. And maybe we need to start supervising them more and more. And as I said before, read that book by Clayton Kramer, my brother Ron. We're going to have Clayton on sometime to talk about that book again and to talk about the challenges in mental health. Some very serious problems out there, and we got to start making sure that these people who need help, we got to do something about it so that they don't go out and hurt other people like we just saw up there in Connecticut. Everybody have a wonderful week. This being the season of Christmas, let's leave you with a little Christmas music. Everybody have a great week. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. Good night, everybody.